Welcome to ITE 1, Semester 2, Module 10. This is our Customer Service and Communication Lecture. We've got a pretty full group today, which is very good because this is going to be quite an interactive session. Before I start, I'm going to let Elise do the Chapter 9 quiz so that we can have a review of what we learned last week. Then we'll jump right into it. All right, Elise, go ahead.
Thanks, Grace. Welcome, everybody. It's great to see you all on this morning. And also, I'd like to acknowledge our Sri Lankan students who I know they listen. They don't often come on the lecture, but it's nice to hear that they're actually out there downloading the lecture. So big Aussie hello to the Sri Lankan students and trainers. So it's great to have you there. All right, I'm back from Perth, and it's a very lovely city in which to visit and to live, and back here in Melbourne, and all refreshed and ready to go. Now, let's see if everyone, I think, has their chat windows open, and we're ready to go and see how much was absorbed from Module 9, both weeks of Module 9, because we had to split it. So here we go. Module 9 was all about the security, and there's always lots to talk about with security. I spent all day doing it yesterday on a friend's computer, which was all very good, because it reinforced the stuff that we've learned here in CAVI. All right, Module 9's quiz. Here we go. Fingers at the ready. Okay, question 1. What characterizes a DDoS attack? That's DDoS, not DOS, but DDoS attack. A. Many hosts participate in a coordinated attack. B. It takes only a short time to set up. C. Home computers with internet connections are not susceptible. And D, it is easy to determine the intent of a packet. Go now. Any other takers? The people who got A are correct. Yeah, come on. Oh, yeah, have we missed out? Come on, everybody. The reason A is correct is because it means that many hosts or many computers participate in a coordinated attack. Yes, it probably does take a short time to set up for anyone who's good at setting them up, but the answer that Cisco are after is option A. Which two threats are physical threats? Do we want to do this as a yes or no job? How do we do these ones, Geraldine?
You do yes or no.
Oh, yeah, usually yes no.
Yes or no.
That's the best way.
Right. Yep, sure. Okay. So we're going to choose two out of this lot. Okay, which two threats are physical threats? A, laptops are stored in an unlocked cabinet. Some more people.
Just a question. Is anybody having trouble navigating Ventrilo, and do we need to actually come up with some resources to make people happier? Because people seem to have trouble getting to their chat windows and their typey boxes and all that sort of stuff.
Every time I put in a response, it loses the focus on the chat. I can get back to it, no problem, Carrie.
I don't know. Have you got a touchpad or something you might be nudging that would cause that to happen? Because mine doesn't lose focus, or is it a Windows Vista 7 thing, although I've never seen it happen there.
It could be me hitting the touchpad. I'm trying to avoid that at all costs.
What sort of laptop you got, an HP?
Yes, sir.
You should have a little button on the top of your touchpad. You might be able to press and it'll turn that off.
Well, we can always come back to the advantages and disadvantages to owning HP computers later on.
Well, certainly, okay, we'll probably come up in our trouble support, actually. But, if people do want to talk to us off lecture, if you are having Ventrilo problems or you do need some extra resources, you can email the CAVI instructor's alias and speak up quietly. We won't dob you in as to who you are. We'd be more than happy to prepare those resources if it would make anybody's life easier. Okay, back to you, Elise.
Thank you. Oh, alternatively, if people are interested, we could run a bit of a lecture on it, and if you're up for admitting who you are, if you have a problem with Ventrilo, we'll be happy to talk to you, so there's always that option too. All right, okay, so which two threats are physical threats? For the people who got yes on the laptops are secured in an unsecured cabinet, are correct. Okay, antivirus software has outdated virus definitions. Is this a physical threat or not, guys? For all of you people who answered no, which is everybody, you are correct. Option C, all users use one generic username and password to access the network. Everyone who got no is correct. The person who got Y is incorrect because we're talking about a physical threat. Yes, it is a threat, but we're actually specifically talking about physical threats. And it's one thing to be aware of when you're doing the module exams too, is take note of the wording of the sentence is done, because it only takes one word to change the complete meaning of a sentence. Okay, here's an option, physical threats. The network and network server are kept in the corner of the office for easy access. Yep, absolutely, because students can go and touch it and then we won't like that. Well, people can come and steal it or do damage, so we'd like to have a server room. The computers are secured to the desk for each user. Is this a physical threat or not? For everybody who answered no, which is everybody, you are correct. Okay, question three. Which type of security threat installs to the computer without the user's knowledge and then monitors all computer activity? A, wherever my cursor, A, adware. B, greyware. C, malware. And D, spyware. Go now. For everyone, which I think was everybody, answering D, you are correct. Well done, guys. Which type of security threat uses email and sends to a user and asks the email recipient to visit a website to enter confidential information? A, badware. B, phishing. C, stealth virus. Or D, worm. Go now. Yeah, we all know about phishing, spelt with a P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. Okay, another, we'll do this one as a yes, no. A technician is attempting to secure a wireless network. Which two options should be performed to secure access to the network? Okay, we'll do this as a yes or no. First option, change the default administrator password for all access points. We have three answers. Are there any more?
Can you repeat that, Elise?
Certainly can, Bob. Basically, a wireless technician is securing a network. Which one of these options, or which two of these options, and we'll give it to you as A or B, as yes or no, should a technician do to make these networks secure? Okay, the option I have in front of me at the moment, Bob, is change the default administrator password on all the access points. Yep, well done. And the reason we do that, well, they say all access points, which is, I guess, correct, but certainly on the access points you're using, make sure that they all come out of the box with the default administrator password and username. Most of the hackers know them. So the first thing you should do when you're building your wireless network is change those known default values on not only your access point, but your router, or your integrated services router, if that's what you're using.
Interestingly enough, I've noticed on the Linksys routers, there's actually a checkbox, and I'm not sure whether it's checked by default, that actually disallows administration from a wireless station to actually stop that dead in its tracks.
Yep, that there is, which I've actually done, and it's turned off by default, but yes, the option is very quickly, easily turned on by checking the box, which is what I've done, as well as change the default password. Okay, yes, the Linksys, all the three Linksys routers I've configured this year have had that, so that's really cool.
Of course, you can also install alternate firmware, and that's even better, but we won't talk about that today.
Okay, another option is install a security appliance to stop all wireless traffic. Is this an option a security person might want to do? Exactly. The people who answered no are correct, because stopping all wireless traffic would also have the desired result of securing your network, but would render it useless. Okay, another option would be enable the broadcast SSID for only one access point. People who are answering no are correct. An option might be to use MAC filtering. Yes or no? Geez, they're all going good today, aren't they, Geraldine? Everyone's coming up going, why, when they're meant to, and then when they're not meant to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yep, all those people who answered why, which is everybody, using MAC filtering is an option. I'm not using it here, but people do, and it is a way of securing your network. And use the default, one last option is use the default SSIDs for the access points, which, of course, is going to be no. Okay, question six. A wireless technician has configured a existing wireless network with encryption. Yesterday, users who were able to use the wireless network are now unable to do so. What is the probable cause for these users' problems? Option A. WEP is a strong encryption technique that requires a successful handshake to establish connectivity. B, the access point cannot broadcast SSIDs when WEP or web is enabled. C, the users have not configured their computers for web encryption. And D, the access point uses 64-bit encryption, which is obsolete. Go now. For everybody who answered C, you are correct. Which step, question seven, which step should a technician perform first when troubleshooting security issues? Option A, gather data from the computer. B, gather data from the customer. C, evaluate the problem. And D, verify the obvious issues. Go now. More people answered this question correctly than they did last week. I remember it well. For those who answered B, which is everybody, you are correct. Question 8. Which protocol was designed to provide security for WPA devices and efficiently uses bandwidth? A, SEC TLS. Now, I'm not sure whether we covered this properly in the lecture, but I think it's in the notes. B, TCP SEC. C, TTL. D, WTCP. And E, WTLS. Now, these ones are often tricky to remember the different letters. Yeah, Dan knows always a good answer.
WTLS.
And as Kerry says, it's WTLS. Sorry if I may have read it a bit staggered. I was trying to do a Jaws thing as well. That is the end of the quiz. Congratulations, everybody. You all did well.
Good job, everybody.
So, with that, here endeth the quiz, and it's over to you, Grace, for Chapter 10, Customer Service.
Okay, everybody. Welcome to Chapter 10. This is going to be our Customer Service Communication Soft Skills Lecture. So it's going to be pretty interactive, and we're all going to be communicating with each other, and it should be quite fun. All right. So, you know the stereotype of the technician who really has no people skills. He's a great technician. He can fix any computer, but you just can't talk to him. And his most social time is on World of Warcraft late at night on the internet. Well, that's okay, but he's about as valuable as a technician who is incompetent but has great communication skills. Neither of them are going to do real well in the job market. So we've got to work on our communication skills in order to be well-versed and be a well-rounded technician.
Grace is just tabbing something into submission. She'll be back in a moment.
Well, AutoVox helps you be able to read your notes, guys. It really does. There we are.
You got a problem?
Now we'll...
No. She wasn't on AutoVox yet, and she isn't quite dexterous enough, and we won't let her use a toe to hold down the control key.
Oh, go on.
Sorry about that. I was like, I want to look at my notes. Why can't I look at my notes? Oh, because I don't have two hands free. Okay. As I was saying, have you guys ever had, I'm sure everybody's had technicians who have come over to their house to fix one thing or another. Does anyone want to share a good or bad experience? And what? Stupid human tricks?
Your thing about being able to read your notes, but you didn't have two hands free, so
that's a problem. Okay. Well, now that you said something, Amanda, why don't you share an experience with us where you've had a customer, technician come over to your house to fix something or do something. Tell us about an experience that made you feel good about the technician.
Well, I guess I had one. Both of these involve cable boxes. I had one situation where cable guy came over and, you know, was of course willing to set everything up, but didn't want to help program the box or anything else like that, which, you know, of course I needed help doing. So that one was kind of bad. But then on the other hand, I had a situation where the tech was, you know, really great and was willing to program the box and was really even willing to program the remote. The digital remote that I had gotten, the universal remote that I had gotten for the box, so that was good.
Yeah, so he made you feel valued, and if you could, you would try and choose that tech to come and fix your next problem, not the guy who was lazy and wouldn't help you fix your stuff up, huh?
Right.
I had a really good experience with a technician who came over to try and sort out my wireless network. A sort of really nice fella that took his time, took a lot of effort, you know, really hunted down the problem and came up with the solution. Isn't that right, Kerry?
I was just sitting here going, I think I know who she's talking about.
Checks in the mail here.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, one of the things I was actually going to say very briefly, and Grace will expand on this because I'm just taking attention away from me here, is that you? I think you can safely say that, as far as businesses are concerned, good technicians with good people skills and customer support skills and good interpersonal skills will either break or make a business. And I'm not going to mention any names, but let's just say one of the screen manufacturers we're happier to call, and the other one we're not so happy to call, because sometimes you don't always get the best tech support experience that you would enjoy, whereas the other lot will bend over backwards for you. So no names mentioned there, but it does make a big difference in how you feel about these companies, whether you want to deal with them again, and whether you have a worthwhile user experience as part of dealing with them. Well, let's. I think you'll probably already know. So, and perhaps we've just had some bad experiences. But we have it with our adaptive technology companies over here. Some of them are quite nice. Some of them are quite user focused. Some of them quite good. You're happy to deal with them. Some of them, maybe not. They just don't quite seem to connect with the customer. They don't help you out to the level that you want to be helped out, and they don't make you feel a valued consumer. Because let's face it, guys, if they're going to take lots of our money, we want to feel happy about it, or at least as happy as we can. It's a bit nasty if you get some bad tech support experiences and they still want to take all your money.
Absolutely.
And I'd just like to summarise very quickly and say that this is probably not everybody that works at these particular organisations. It's just you get a few people that make the rest of the team look bad. So I just thought I'd point that out as well. There are some very shining stars that exist in organisations that do an excellent job, whereas the rest of the organisation perhaps doesn't shine as brightly.
Oh, absolutely. But you remember the ones that are bad and you remember the ones that are good. And the ones that are good, you'll recommend to your friends, and you'll try to get on those calls. And the ones that are bad, they will live in infamy forever among the blind community, and everybody knows who they are. So, yeah. And it's very important as blind people to have excellent customer service skills, because we are a small community, and we can be pretty clicky. So if we're working within our own community, really try very, very hard to serve your customers well and not to be rude, because it gets around. As you get more practice troubleshooting hardware and software, of course, you'll be better at diagnosing and fixing the problems more quickly. And the same goes for communication skills. Practice makes perfect. A knowledgeable technician who uses good communication skills will always be in demand in the job market. The better communicator you are, the better troubleshooter you will be as well. If you can calm a frazzled customer by building a good rapport, you will get more relevant information to solve the problem you're trying to solve. When your computer breaks, Elise, when you go into your Lonsdale Media stuff, and your internet connection doesn't work, and you've got a website to build, and you've got emails to send out, that stresses you out pretty badly, doesn't it?
Indeed it does. And it's also, just really spins me out sometimes, and I just don't want to be bothered with it all. I've also had customers who can't get their emails through for varied reasons, and they go ringing me up. So it's just often very tricky, because when you're running a business, you do feel the need to get what you have to get done so you can move on to the next thing, because you yourself often have customers and clients who you've promised that you're going to get things done to. So, yeah, it's not cool when there's a business aspect to it and the services aren't there.
Right. So I'm guessing everybody knows how the customers feels and how it is to be on the customer's end, and your stuff just isn't working and you're completely frustrated. Well, now you're on the other end, and you are the one they're calling for help, and they want you to try your best to make everything work so that they can get on with their lives. So they may not be the most calm people. So you're going to give them a little bit of time to tell you what the problem is, and you're going to say things like, yes, I understand, and you're going to try to be sympathetic and say, look, I'm very sorry that this happened, but we'll try to make this better, and we'll try to make it get you back up and running as soon as possible.
Well, and in a lot
what is
of cases
the first
too,
go ahead
in a lot of cases too you're going to pretty much assume that you know, at least for the customer and for the time being of that call, that it really is your fault, because that's pretty much what they want to, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that it really is your fault, because often it's not, but you're not going to come out and say, oh, yes, it is actually my fault, but you are pretty much going to take the blame for what's going on right now so that you can take responsibility, so that you can, you know, make the customer feel that you're going to do everything in your power to fix it.
Absolutely. You are going
different from taking responsibility.
Yeah. Right, I agree.
Be clear on that.
You're the face of the company. They want a living, breathing person to take accountability and responsibility for the problem. That's you. Until you either solve the problem or you escalate it to a higher technician.
I think it's also true to say that people need to get the blame game out of their system before they can start being productive. So if you take the responsibility and you actually take as much responsibility for the current situation as you can actually stop people from running around in the blame game being completely unproductive, and you might actually start getting useful information out of them. And I find that that's certainly a good way to do it, and the fact you can remember is that if you solve that user's problem, once you hang up that call, that's the end of it. It's not as if, you know, this thing's going to be something that's going to follow you around for the rest of your life. But people need somebody to blame. They need somebody to get their anger out on. And if you can sort of deflect that away and get the customers on to being productive and giving you the information you need to solve the problems, it's certainly a very useful social engineering tactic.
And you know what? It works both ways. If you solve the problem, you get the, quote, blame for that, too. You get the credit. So if you say, yeah, okay, I'm sorry that this happened, and I'm going to do my best to fix it, and you, you know, let them, you know, if you take responsibility for that problem, when you solve it, you're going to get responsibility for that, too. And you know it's really not your fault. You didn't do it. But if they have a face and, something... someone that will actually take responsibility for it, it makes people feel a lot better.
Well, and especially when you work with the blind community, and, you know, I know this because I worked for, you know, a adaptive technology company, a lot of times you'll get a situation where you have what we like to call tech shopping, where people will call and they won't, until they get their favorite tech, they will hang up and they will keep calling until they get their favorite tech. And sometimes that can be a result of, well, you fixed their problem so well, they want to talk to you and they don't want to talk to anybody else.
Gotta love it.
That in itself can be a problem, because people will tend to favoritize on who they want the problem fixed. And then you'll find that if you've got one or two good techs, you'll tend to overload them. And then the ones that aren't so good don't ever get a chance to brush up their customer service skills. So that can be a bit of an ongoing problem there.
Well, yeah, that was our issue with it. It's like, you know, you keep calling, and then they'd either get somebody who, you know, they didn't want to deal with, and they'd say, well, I want to talk to so-and-so, or can you just transfer me to so-and-so, which can be a bit of a, you know, you shouldn't get offended by it, but sometimes it can be offensive if it's been a long day and you're dealing with people that, you know, sometimes you'd just rather not deal with. But, yeah, that can become a problem rather quickly.
I never used to get offended whenever I'm rang up wanting to speak to other people, I can tell you that.
No.
I used to say, with pleasure, and get the transfer happening pretty quick. But that's only me.
Yeah, but we weren't allowed to transfer them back. We weren't allowed to transfer them over, so we had to, you know, we'll say, no, you know, you're going to have to, you know, I'll be more than happy to help you with your problem, but I unfortunately can't transfer you to, you know, whoever.
Yeah, and most call centers are like that. You could say, yeah, well, I can't get them, but if you'd like, I can help you with their problem. If they hang up, well... there's nothing you can really do about it, and don't take it personally, because it's really not about you, and you can also think in the back of your mind, that's probably a trouble customer, and it's probably okay that I don't have to deal with it, and take a deep breath, relax, and go on to your next call.
Yep, pretty much.
Can anybody tell me the first step of the troubleshooting process?
Anyone?
Come on, this is really important.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's right. These are on your test. You're final. I believe you do have to put them in order. Yep, gather data from the customer. That's the first thing you have to do. So that's why your communication is so important. That initial gathering period from the customer will give you a lot of the information that will help you to solve your computer problem. Unless you're a depot technician and just get the computer put on your bench with a little sheet of paper, which we're blind. Most of us will not be doing that. So, guess what? We got to talk to people, guys. You've got lots of resources to help you learn to communicate well. You have personal experience. You'll have your scripts. There are websites that will help you. Search engines to help you solve the problem. You'll have online FAQs to help you solve the problem. Coworkers to give you strategies. And you will have support from vendors.
Anyone tried Aardvark apart from Grace and I?
Yes, that is very cool.
What's that?
It's a thing called Aardvark. I think it's www.vark.com is actually their website, V-A-R-K. But it's you can sign up via instant messenger, you can do it via email, you can do it by, I think you can do it by Twitter and about 7 or 8 other social platforms. And you ask questions to a network of people and then you get answers to those questions. And they're generally questions that Google can't give you the answer to. For example, anybody know of any good restaurants in the Victoria Park area or something, and you actually get people out on the internet that actually respond to those questions, and you actually get the answer to answer other people's questions as well. It's kind of cool if you've got the time to sit down and answer, fire back a few answers to questions if you've, you know, but it's certainly worth a look.
There's a restaurant, there's a website like that, but you could do a lot of it with your cell phone called KFB, where you can text a question and they get back to you.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And there's another one that does that too, and I can't remember what it's called.
Urban Spoon Pronto, on the iPhone.
Pronto.
Yeah, there's one called Cha-Cha that does that too.
Oh, Cha-Cha, that's the one I was thinking of. Pronto died.
It obviously wasn't ready. Well, Pronto is the Italian word for ready.
Yeah.
But as for restaurants in the Victoria Park area, I now know 3 of them, thanks to my wonderful hosts last week.
Well, actually, just as a matter of curiosity, there's a site called www.eatability.com.au if you're in Australia, and you put in your postcode and it'll tell you what restaurants are around you. So that was just an example.
That's handy to know. Thank you, Karen.
So we're going to talk about professionalism now, and this is very important, because we want to present ourselves professionally, and sometimes, I think most of us do, but sometimes people don't know what present yourself professionally means. So we're just going to go over a lot of do's and don'ts for that. When you're talking to a customer on the phone or in person, it's important to communicate well and present yourself professionally. Your professionalism and communication skills will enhance your credibility with the customer. If you have a little bit of vision, and you had a repair person come over, and they had torn up jeans, they had a dirty, oily, greasy shirt, even if you don't have vision, they smelled bad, and they didn't use proper grammar, would you think that person would be capable of fixing your stuff?
I'd say no.
Maybe a car.
For some of the IT geeks, I'm not so sure. Probably
he's not touching my computer.
Scary thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you want them in your house, guys? So that's why we have to dress cleanly and appropriately, keep our clothes clean, try to fold them and do all that. You want to make sure your clothes match, and if you ever want some handy-dandy household LS how to do that type of tips, if anyone really would like that to happen, I'm sure we could have a mini lecture on that if it's needed. So we won't say who you are. If you email and say, yeah, I want handy-dandy how do I dress and keep my stuff organized tips, we'll make that happen and it'll be all good. Just email. We won't tell anybody who you are.
Make sure you email Cavi instructors, not the mailing list, or you will in fact tell everybody who you are. And we have had some students do that occasionally. We had one answer the send all the emails to one of their the answer to their lab to the discuss mailing list. It's all right. They only did it once, but it was pretty funny. And they were wrong. So everybody who copied their answers were wrong also.
there, all these people out there thought, oh, I could have got the answers. No, we're wrong.
Oh, that's so funny.
I think it's one of those statistics. 60% of first impression is based on appearance or something horrific like that.
Okay. So we are going to now build our ideal technician in professionalism and all that. So I want everybody to go around and name one thing that they want their technician to do that would be professional, or where, or whatever it may be. And we're going to just come up with a little bit of a list of professional behaviors. So let's start with Bob.
Okay, I'd like my technician to treat me as if I was an intelligent life form and not talk down to me. I believe that's a professional approach.
Absolutely. Okay. How about Amanda?
I would say, you know, display some level of competence at your job. I consider that to be professional. But also, too, if you don't know the answer to something, just say, I don't know. Don't say something like, well, you know, come up with some sort of around
BS
the book
answer.
Excuse, I'm trying to... Huh?
Yeah, she said BS answer.
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay. How about Leon?
Sure, I think I'd like the technician to be courteous.
Absolutely. Joe, do you have one?
I would like him or her to dress professionally and come prepared with his or her toolkit with the tools that they may need on the job.
That'd be nice. Elise?
Sorry, I didn't get the question. What was that, Grace?
Professional behavior.
Professional behavior. We're making a list of stuff that would be professional behavior for our dream technician.
Oh, our dream technician. Good grief. Coming to visit or on the phone? Let me see. Well, I think what everybody said, courtesy, well-natured, well-mannered, knowledgeable, or at least the ability to find stuff out if they didn't know, and even admit to the fact that they didn't know. That often goes a long way.
Absolutely.
I'd say patience. I'd like my technician to be patient with me because I got hit by the stupid stick today and I'm not very fast. So a little bit of patience would be good.
I'd like the technician to be courteous of my space. I had a technician who set up a table for me and left a dirty cigarette butt on my ledge. And I didn't know about it for days until somebody said, "Do you smoke?" And I was like, "No, there's a dirty cigarette butt on your ledge."
Just don't let them in the house if they smoke. That's easy fixed.
I appreciate it if they take the time to explain what they're doing to fix my problem. I mean, not too detailed, but at least the basics.
Yeah, that's great. Because you want to know what people are doing inside of your house or to your computer remotely or whatever it is they're doing. All right, those are all really good. That's a really good list. I didn't forget anybody, did I?
Well, nobody asked Geraldine, but she'll...
I think she's busy. All right. Do you have something to add?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. No, I was listening.
Oh, okay. All right. Now I'm going to give you a list of behaviors not to do while communicating with customers. As Bob said, avoid minimizing the customer's problem. Don't say, well... that's not a big problem. I've got 23 other problems to deal with, so you're going to the back of the queue. Bye! Avoid using jargon, abbreviations, and acronyms unless the customer...
That's important. Mm.
Unless the customer thinks they're an experienced user, you know, then it's probably okay to make them feel smart. But other than that, really don't, because you don't know which acronyms people know. That are not
actually there's a guy that lives opposite where I live, and he works for an IT company here in Perth, and apparently on his car, so I'm told, he has a sign that says, "We speak your language," you know, like we don't use highfalutin IT language, and that's important, very, very important.
Often jargonizing is a method of isolating a community away from another community, or there are specialized words that the community uses, but often the community uses jargonization as a way to show how cool they are, which doesn't really work with regular people. I think we have to strike a balance between using regular language but also not dumbing it down too far, because dumbing it down too far can be a problem as well. You don't want to go up to the person and go, "Your PC is broken, see? I fix. You break, I fix." You're probably going to be shown the door very quickly. So probably a good medium level of language delivery would be good.
You know what? And it's really about adapting to your customers, which I'll talk about in a little bit, and knowing what your customer needs from you. Some of them may need real dumbing down. My mother really does need dumbing down for her computer stuff. And "you break it, I'll fix it" is probably about all she really wants to know. It very much depends on the customer. You need to sense what they need and what they want from you. And sometimes that can be hard. But as I said, you're learning to fix computers and diagnose their problems. The other part of that is diagnosing your customers and who they are. Avoid a negative attitude or tone of voice. So, you know, when I'm talking like this, you can tell that I'm completely bored. I don't care about this, and I don't want to do this lecture. But if I come in and speak like this and say, "Good morning, everybody. How's it going? I hope everybody's doing well, and I'm excited to do this lecture," you can tell, can't you?
The silence was deafening.
Can anyone not tell?
I think we all can, but I think the smile quotient was a tad high there. I think we're all recovering.
Okay, so you don't have to do that, but try not to adopt a negative attitude or tone of voice, because people can tell. And now you don't have to be all smiles, but smiling a little bit and having a happy, pleasant tone with people, they'll know it, and it'll make all the difference. Avoid arguing with the customer or becoming defensive. Remember that it really probably is not your fault. So, if they're going to be rude to you, just let it slide off your back. It's not personal, and they're having a bad day because their computer equipment's not working. So don't be defensive. Say, "Yes, I understand that you're angry, but I need your cooperation to fix this problem," or something to that effect.
"But I don't like you."
"Sorry." I'm very sorry to hear that, but I'm currently trying to help you to fix your problem, and if you'd like
your
problem
care.
Fixed... Okay.
At that point, I would be saying, "You fix it yourself. Thanks for calling."
If somebody said to me, "I don't care," I would be saying, "Well, then I'll leave, because you obviously don't care."
Yeah, exactly. "Well, I'm sorry to be taking up your time, sir. Have a nice day."
"I'm not a sir."
Could have fooled me. I mean, sorry for my mistake.
So I think that it go over like a lead balloon.
Sorry, you got stamped on twice there, Amanda. Sorry, Amanda. You were trying to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, when you're working in, like, an actual customer service environment, where, and by customer service, I mean where tech support in a lot of ways takes a backseat to customer service, if somebody's really being rude to you, I mean, short of them actually being, like, harassing or using racial epithets or being whatever, you kind of have to deal with them. You can't tell them to have a nice day or, you know, whatever. I mean, you really do end up having to put up with it. And that's where you get to the point where you go and you get off work and you drown all your sorrows out in rivers of beer.
Yep.
And hope they don't drink at the same pub you do.
Yep.
When I was volunteering at my call center, I only had to actually terminate one call because he was saying some pretty demeaning things about women and that he wanted to come and kill everybody at the place I was, political organization I was working with. So I just kind of hung up that call and reported the phone number to my manager. So, yeah, got that going for you. Avoid being judgmental, insulting, or calling the customer names. The customer may seem pretty stupid. We don't call them stupid. we just don't. And we try to make sure they don't feel as though they are stupid. So, you don't know. They may be having a really bad day. And maybe they're really great with computers normally. But you know what? Stress does a lot of things to a lot of people. For example, usually I put the dishes away correctly, but I was under stress after cooking dinner last night, so I put a glass in front of the cereal, and when we went to open the cupboard, it fell out and broke. Normally I can do that just fine, but anyone else who would have known probably would have thought I'd been hit with the stupid stick. So, we don't judge, or we really try not to, and we try and let does not know that we are judging.
Of course, if you are, make sure you keep your judgment to yourself or within your trusted group. Make sure the mute button works on your phone, or better still, keep the judgment off the phone altogether. There have been a couple of instances where the mute button hasn't functioned and you've sweared and cursed at the customer because you thought they were on hold and found out that they were still listening to you. Not a particularly cool thing to do. It's happened to all of us once in a while. So, it's something to be aware of. You know, try and maintain that professionalism whilst you're in that work environment, and stuff until you're outside the work environment.
Yeah, I have a story. There was an old deaf woman that one of my friends used to work with in customer service, and she was hearing impaired, and she said, "Oh, you must have a whole tape full of all of my stupid calls." And he hit the mute button, or thought he did, and he said, "I couldn't. There wouldn't be enough tape." And unfortunately, the mute button didn't work, but she was just like, what was that you said? Because she was hearing impaired. So he got out of that one okay. So just try and save yourself the embarrassment, guys. Avoid distractions or interruptions when talking with customers. When you're talking with a customer, actually listen to them. Don't go off and check your tweets, because that's just rude. Avoid unnecessary holds and abrupt holds. Don't put them on hold to check your text messages. That's not very cool. Avoid transfers without explaining the purpose of the transfer and getting the customer's consent. So if you've got that cranky customer and it's your policy to transfer somebody who is being difficult up to a supervisor to handle them, you're going to say, wait till they're done talking, and then you're going to say, I'm going to transfer you to someone who can better serve you. Is that all right with you? And hopefully they'll say yes. And you say,
no.
It should. No?
Don't say no. You're in trouble.
Well, the book doesn't cover that, but the book always assumes that they're going to say yes. You guys have seen this. The book always assumes they're going to say yes. I figure you just say, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to do that anyway. I mean, really? I don't know.
There's always the old accidental disconnect.
We don't condone that sort of behavior, but yes, sometimes magic staplers and hole punches and the phone receiver will sometimes fall back into the cradle. We certainly don't condone that sort of behavior, but yes, sometimes that can happen, especially if the person has become completely unreasonable. Sometimes it can be the only way of getting oneself out of a loop situation, but we certainly don't recommend that sort of behavior, generally speaking, if you can avoid it.
I did in-home service for 6 years, and I thank God every day for the ability to hang up the telephone if it's a must-do situation.
Absolutely. And there may be very, very rarely some of those.
when they start cussing at you, you know it's time to either cool them down or tell them to call back later when they can stop cursing.
Yep, and many companies have policies and scripts for what you're going to say to that type of a customer. But supposing they say, yeah, fine, whatever, you're horrible, get me to somebody who can actually help me, you useless piece. You're going to say, okay, thank you for calling us, have a nice day, someone will be with you in however long it usually takes someone to be with you, and you will transfer that person, take a deep breath, have a sigh of relief, and they be glad that you are now hopefully done with that customer for quite a while.
It's probably worth mentioning here that whilst there are situations where you do need to transfer calls away and there are calls that you can't handle and there are people that do need to go to the supervisor, it's also worth mentioning that the more calls you can handle without transferring them up to your supervisor will often make your supervisor a happy person. So there is a medium to be struck there.
Absolutely. And you do really try to handle the calls. But just give customers warning when you're going to transfer them. Don't just do it. That was the point of this. Avoid negative remarks about other technicians to the customer. That technician may be completely incompetent, but you do not need to say that to the customer. Well, I had this customer over to fix my problem and it didn't work. Well, that's because he is really been hit with the stupid stick. I'm sorry about that. What you're going to say is, I'm very sorry. Let me try to fix it for you. Or
let's not break my stupid stick. It seems to be getting a lot of use today.
It is. It is. So, try to think of each new customer or call as a fresh start and do not carry frustrations over from one call to another. This is very important. Because your next customer didn't really do anything to you yet and does not deserve a frustrated, wrung-out technician. Another really good thing to do is know how to handle your phone system. Make sure that you know how to transfer people, put them on hold, how to check another line if you're responsible for two lines, how to send somebody to a voicemail, and all of that good stuff. Because you don't want to lose your customers, that annoys them and irritates them. And in sales, they may not call back, and you want that sale. Be positive. Focus on what you can do, not what you can't do. Talk about alternatives. Well, no, I cannot come out. Instead of saying, no, I cannot come out to your house to fix this problem, and say, well, I can gain remote access to your computer and fix that for you. If you're not allowed to sit there and train them on how to fix a certain problem because it's not in their service level agreement, you can say, well, I can send you step-by-step email instructions on how to fix that. If they don't have a service level agreement and you are not allowed to do technical support for them, you don't say, sorry, I can't help you. You might say, well, our website, www.qcat.org, has the resources you might need. It's always important to be positive and talk about what you can do.
I actually had that happen to me once, actually. Some people rang me up and said, our internet is not working. And they were very sad because their internet wasn't working, and they said, can you help us fix it? I said, well, sadly, your boss doesn't pay me anymore, but I'll tell you off the record that if you go find the modem and turn it off for 20 seconds and turn it back on, we'll speak no more about it. And that way they were happy, they got their internet back up, but they also were aware that my number possibly should be taken down off the I need help wall because my boss was no longer dealing with me.
Okay. There are three things you should always do when you begin a conversation with a customer. If you know it, call your customer by name. Relate to the customer. Use brief communication to create a one-to-one connection between you and your customer. So show them sympathy for their problem. Say, I understand how hard that can be. Yeah, that's really a drag or whatever. This makes the customer feel that you're human. Don't spend very much time. It's brief communication. but it does really help build up your rapport, and the customer will be calm and think they're talking to a real human being who is taking responsibility for their problems. Understand, determine the customer's level of knowledge about the computer to know how to effectively communicate with the customer. As I said, when putting a customer on hold or transferring them, explain why, ask their permission, give them an estimate of how long it will take, and do this all after they stop talking. Let them finish their sentence or train of thought, and then say, yes, may I please put you on hold for 30 seconds while I access your account, or while I reset your password, or whatever it may be that you have to do. And try not to put a customer on hold for very long. Practice active listening, like I'm sure you're doing in all of our lectures. While the customer is speaking, really pay attention to what they're saying. You can occasionally interject with a short word or phrase, such as, yes, okay, I understand. Try not to think of what to say before the customer has finished speaking. That is the trademark of our active listening. Because if you're thinking about what to say when someone's speaking, then you are not listening to them as fully as you probably should be. Interjecting and making a statement to show the customer that you're still listening is way different from interrupting to ask a question or make a statement. This is actually rude. So we don't interrupt them. We can make an occasional statement to let them know we're listening, but we never interrupt to ask a question or make a statement. We wait till they're done, and then we clarify with the customer to show that we understand what they've told us, how you will paraphrase what they've said. You can start with, let me see if I understand what you've told me, and then paraphrase what they've said. This lets the customer know that you are really listening and that you understand their problem. And if there's something that they said wrong, they'll say, no, actually, I meant this. And you'll get more relevant information that way. After you've confirmed with the customer, you will probably need to ask questions. ask questions that are relevant to the problem, of course. Do not ask questions that the customer has already answered just for the sake of asking questions, because this doesn't look very professional and you're just being irritating. Okay, we've got a little bit of an activity here. Can anyone else, I gave you a few examples earlier, can anyone else think of a way to positively phrase something negative?
Anyone awake?
I'll give it a go.
Yeah,
go for it, Leon.
Perhaps what you can say as a technician is, well, I'm sorry that happened.
Yeah. What if you were unable to possibly fix their problem? How would you phrase that in a positive way?
Okay, I'm very sorry that we couldn't correct the problem right now, but I'm sure it can be fixed, and we'll get someone else on the line here to help you with this as soon as possible. Oh, boy, that was pretty lame, huh?
No, we don't want to use couldn't, but I'd say I will research the problem further, and I will forward it to a level 2 support technician, and I'm sure the problem will be fixed very soon.
If you're forwarding it to a level 2 support technician, you're not researching it. You're forwarding it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, whichever you're doing. Go ahead.
Thank God most of my customers aren't as smart as you, Carrie.
Right? We'd all be in trouble then.
That would fall under the category of the intelligent and knowledgeable customer.
Yeah, that's right.
They hate dealing with me.
Okay, we are going to do a little activity about do's and don'ts of putting a customer on hold. So, somebody, anybody, just go ahead and either type in your chat window or vocalize. Is this a do or a don't? Do we or do we not let the customer finish talking?
We do.
Yes.
We do. That's right. Do we interrupt the customer?
No.
No.
Right. Do we explain that we have to put the customer on hold and why?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, and we ask their permission to do so.
Yep. Do we abruptly put the customer on hold?
No. Nope.
Definitely not.
Nope. That's right. Do we ask the customer if it is all right to put them on hold?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do we put the customer on hold without exclamation or the customer's consent?
No.
Yeah.
All right. Do we once given consent tell the customer you will be just a minute?
Yes.
No, we actually tell them about how long we should be. Just a minute's a little vague, so we would say, I'll be 1 to 2 minutes, or I'll just be 30 seconds, and we try to keep the hold as brief as possible.
Grace, if we are going to be more than, say, I'm going to put, say, carry on hold for 2 minutes, and it's just about the 2-minute mark, and I'm still not sure of my answer, may I come back to him and say, excuse me, Kerry, I'm sorry for the delay, but it's going to take me another minute. Is that an okay thing to do for your customer?
Oh, yeah, you should.
Yep. Yeah, you definitely should. Keep saying, yes, I'm still here. I'm still working on your problem. I'll just be another minute. Thank you for holding.
Or actually what you can do, a lot of companies do this as well, they ask you if it's okay for you to continue holding, and if the customer says no, then perhaps you can actually give the customer a call back. A lot of companies have started doing that now, because a lot of people get very angry when they sit on hold and their blood pressure goes up for every minute they're sitting on hold, especially given some of that hold music. It certainly does.
Oh, it's pretty bad.
Thank you.
That's enough to send you over the top, that hold music.
I hate the fact that I hate the fact that every 15 seconds you get this voice going, your call is important to us, and we will deal with your call as soon as possible. It's like, yeah, we know. Okay, you can stop.
Please continue to hold.
Yeah. You know, the hold music is giving me that general impression that you will be with me as soon as possible, unless you're on your lunch break. Then, you know, I'm just a little bit out of luck.
I don't mind the hold music as much as the continual sales pitch that interrupts the music. I wish they'd just
I hate that. And now you can buy our other product.
Company should invent where you can choose what type of music you could listen to while you're on hold. Now, there's a unique idea.
That's awesome. You should patent it.
So I think some companies have actually done that, but I think the other thing that gets me really riled up is that they go, they, you know, you're sort of on hold, and they go, you sort of see there, and they're going, are you having trouble with XYZ? Then perhaps you could also purchase a FUBA 9704.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk to our customer operative when he returns to your call? It's like, yep.
Look, your product doesn't work. I don't want another one. You're getting me at the most inopportune time to buy your stuff.
It must sell stuff, though. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it.
Obviously, talking about music, there's a certain company in Australia whose rendition of I Am Australian, if I were the Seekers, I'd sue them.
Oh, the one with the guy that goes, yeah, when you're ringing our largest phone provider. Yes, I know the one.
It's the one I'd sue the heck out of them if I was the Seekers. We're talking about an Australian piece of music, which was really well done. The company concerned has made a complete and utter mess of it, to be honest.
Well, maybe they got a permission from the band to do it.
Yeah, they did.
Well, I'd be taking that permission right back.
What?
You can actually buy that version on CD, apparently.
What, you're kidding? I'd be putting it through.
No, I'm not. I'm sorry, I'm not. You can. You can buy that one sung by that bloke. I can't remember who he is. The one that sings on the, we might as well say, on the Telstra hold music. You can buy that one. And you can buy it off Big Pond Music if you really want it. I know what to get you for Christmas, Elise.
We'll get you the extra gold-plated box set.
I don't think Elise is going to want that, Kerry. She may use it as a coaster.
I think this is exactly what I'm going to use it for.
Frisbee!
And now, maybe to put some knots on Carrie's head.
And now I'm going to do what they are telling us to do in this lecture. I'm going to take control of this lecture. It's gotten off topic. I've got chatty customers, and it is time to take control of the lecture and focus on the problem at hand, which is teaching you guys customer service. Because the next thing that's on my braille display is that we need to keep control of the call. Do not take comments personally if they're rude or people getting off topic. It's not you. It's them. Stay calm and focused on the customer's problem, and this will help them stay calm and focused on their problem. Okay. We have about 5 different types of customers, and as you work with customers, you will learn to recognize them. The book says, it's important that you learn to recognize them. Don't worry, you will. So we've got the talkative customer. A talkative customer discusses everything except the problem on the call. The customer often uses the call as an opportunity to socialize, and it can be difficult to get the talkative customer to focus on the problem. They will come, when you ask them how they're doing today, they will tell you that they broke their leg, their cat Fifi has cancer, and they've got to take it and get it all these shots, and their grandmother's baking cookies, and so on and so forth. We've got the rude customer, as Geraldine aptly did a very good...
No, it wasn't.
just a hint, if anybody wants to see something humorous, and you must take full responsibility for Googling this up, have a look for the B-O-F-H, and they are quite humorous, and they will show you how not to do tech support. However, if you are easily offended, please do not look that up.
A rude customer complains during the call and often makes negative comments about the product, the service, and the technician. This type of customer is sometimes abusive and uncooperative and gets aggravated very easily. They're awesome. We've got the angry customer. An angry customer talks loudly during the call and often tries to speak when the technician is talking. Angry customers are usually frustrated that they have a problem and upset that they have to call somebody to fix it. Well, sorry guys, it happens. Knowledgeable customers. A knowledgeable customer wants to speak with a technician that is equally experienced in computers. This type of customer usually tries to control the call and does not want to speak with a level 1 technician. We've got the inexperienced technician, grandma. Or mommy.
I don't mean inexperienced customer.
Yeah. Inexperienced customer.
I was going to say his grandma, the inexperienced technician. We've got problems.
Oh, God. That'd be really bad. Oh, my grandma's terrible with computers. An inexperienced technician has difficulty describing the problem. These customers are usually not able to follow directions correctly and not able to communicate the error that they encountered. They're fun. All right, now we are going to talk about how to deal with these customers. We've got the talkative customer. We allow the customer to talk for 1 minute. We gather as much information about the problem as possible. And we politely step in to refocus the customer when they are going off about Cat Fifi again for the 5th or 6th time. This is the exception of the rule to not interrupting the customer. Ask as many closed-ended questions as you need to, and once you've gained control of the call. Don't encourage non-problem related conversation by asking social questions such as, how are you today? All right. A rude customer. You're going to try to be as sympathetic as you can. You're going to show them that their time is valuable. Listen to them. Behind the disparaging marks, try to glean as much information from the call as you can. Does anyone else have any other ideas as to how to deal with a rude customer?
Kill them with kindness.
Absolutely. It's... Oh, hold on.
Testing of the firing alarm system. Evacuate now. He sounds so calm about it. Evacuate now. Yes, okay, whatever you say, mate. So we're about to get sirens and things, so here we go.
Ah, okay. There you go. Hear that?
You're coming through loud and clear. It's like doors closing.
Okay.
What kind of gas?
It must. But they did it last week. Well, now you guys got a taste of what the cavi room is like when we're not on lecture. Okay. Well, besides that rude interrupting customer that we just had, anyone have any ideas of how to deal with a rude customer?
Bob did say kill him with kindness.
Yeah. Yep. No, we cannot just kill them.
Oh.
Be patient with them.
Definitely.
Killing should be a
last resort.
Trying
to keep calm?
Yes.
Make sure your mute button works.
Don't use it. Remember, keep those comments to ourselves until after the call.
Well, in which case, no, I won't say. I was going to say, after the call, make sure the hang-up button works.
Oh, yeah. Put that phone on the receiver. Or press the alt page down if we're Skyping.
Oh, I actually had that happen to me one afternoon. I was on a Skype call to a friend. This is quite a humorous story about how you shouldn't handle this sort of thing. And this guy rang me up on Skype, and I on the telephone, and I'd forgotten completely that I had my headset on. And I got this call, and I'm like, he's like, "You made me angry, and I broke my microphone," and I'm just like, "Well, you can go and shove your microphone, rah, 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 rah." And I sort of slammed down the alt page down, as you do when you're a bit angry, and all of a sudden this voice in my headset went, "Oh, wow, man, I'd really hate to get on your wrong side." I'm just like, oh, hell.
I'll bet that was the last time you did that, Kerry.
No, I've done it a couple of times since, actually, Leon, and I've never spoken to the person that I was ranting at ever since. But the point is that it isn't necessarily something you want to do too often. But it can be quite embarrassing.
Absolutely. That is no good. Okay. If the rude customer gets abusive, look at your customers, your company's policies, and see what you're supposed to do about that. Always know your company's policies fairly well. And if you work for yourself, decide what kind of day you're having and handle it accordingly, I guess. An angry customer. The best thing to do with them is to let them blow off steam for a minute and get some of their anger up. That will help them when you do step in and refocus the call and start to get the information from them. I think that you handle them just like a talkative customer. You do let them have that minute to vent, and then you try to take control of the call and get the information so that you can fix the problem.
Another thing that's probably worth mentioning, and a lot of customers don't ever pay attention to this, has anybody ever noticed that when you ring up places, it says, "For quality control and coaching purposes, this call will be monitored. Please advise the customer support representative if you do not want your call monitored." So they're actually call tapes. And I'm pretty sure that in about 90% of these help desk organizations, they all sit round after work with some beers and listen to the call tapes.
Oh, and they probably know who you are. So, be courteous to people, everybody.
Yeah, caller ID cuts both ways.
So, we've got the knowledgeable customer. This is the one time you can use jargon to make them feel special, because they think they're knowledgeable, they think they're great, a lot of the times, and you can give them more complex instructions and expect them to follow them, and you can use jargon. And You still want to use the same troubleshooting techniques with them, though, and have them do all the little steps if you can, because guess what? Even the most knowledgeable people can realize that they have a network cable unplugged. I've done it, but fortunately, I figured it out right before I called Comcast, or not Comcast, Charter, whoever it was that my internet service provider was at the time. Our inexperienced customer, do not talk down to them. Use easy, clear language, and use very easy instructions without making them feel stupid. You've got to respect the inexperienced customer and try to keep them calm. Talk in a calm voice. Don't get excited if they mess up your instructions a couple of times. And just be very courteous and do not talk down to the inexperienced customer. Does anyone else have any tips or word of wisdom to go through about any of these customer types? Or questions? Is anybody awake?
Grace, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Is if we are transferring a customer, depending on, I guess, company policy, if I'm taking a call from Kerry and I'm going to transfer it over to you, shouldn't I wait for you to get on the phone and say, "Hi, Grace, this is Joe, level one. I have Kerry on the line, and here's what the problem is"?
What you'll do usually is you'll give the other customer service the name and the ticket number so they can look up the problem. And depending on the customer policy, you may get on the phone and introduce the new technician to the customer. That all depends on company policy.
And the complexity of the company's phone system.
Thanks.
Which is interesting, because some phone systems can do it, and some phone systems can't. And if you'd like your phone system to do it, have a look at www.pbxinaflash.net. End advertisement.
Any other questions, comments about how to deal with difficult customers?
Try and keep as calm as possible.
Always try and keep as calm as possible, and always remember not to take things personally. It's probably not your fault.
Makes me wonder whether they make special, you know, 300 ml cans of Rescue Remedy for help desk workers.
Yeah. I need to get some of that myself. And yes, we will go over some stress relieving techniques in just a little bit.
In fact...
Oh. That's not good.
Server is still unwell, no ETA.
Some really bad stuff happened, we're not sure what it was. Will we put the mirror information up, or...? Alright, cool. Alright, so wouldn't you know it, guys, communication skills are not only important over the phone, they're important in person, and of course, over the net. New term for us, netiquette, which governs how you communicate online. Have you ever seen people on a message board going back and forth? They've gotten off topic and now they're just insulting each other? That's called a flame war. We don't want to participate in those.
That's called the zone.
Yeah, it pretty much is. I'm very proud to say I've been free of that for quite a while.
In fact, if you have a cruise back through the list archives of Cavi, which are up at the moment on www.gots.net, you can actually find some little flame wars back in 2007 where some students have been perhaps not as courteous as they possibly should have to their fellow students, and the ensuing mailing list excitement that resulted. I didn't dock the archives, I left them there just as a reminder to other students.
So remember, even on the Cavi mailing list, your messages may be monitored and recorded, as well as just about anywhere else on the internet. Once you put it out there, you don't know how long it's going to stay out there. You may not be sure if it's going to ever be Googleable, or if someone can repost it. So, on the internet, it's always a good idea to be really, really nice.
Actually, interestingly enough, it's an interesting point, because a lot of stuff does have quite high information retention. And I'll put my hand up here. If you Google my name, you'll actually find a message from me to a particular user on the speak-up list in 1988, telling them that no, WindowEyes wasn't going to support their terminal program and perhaps they should try an alternate screen reader. Obviously, I don't feel quite that way in 2009, but the message is still out there sitting in some ancient list archives somewhere. So you do have to be very careful what things you do put out there on the internet, especially with things like Facebook and all of that sort of stuff. It's very easy for information to get out there and be stuck around for quite some time. And often your past can come back to bite you. And you can bet, in a lot of cases these days, that the first thing your potential employer is going to do is Google you.
Have you guys ever gotten an email with lots of misspelled words, no greeting, or all in capital letters? You know what? As blind people, not that we'd really know. But make sure your caps lock key is off, which you should usually be able to hear by the high-pitched. Because sighted people call that shouting, and it looks really loud, and we don't want to do that because it's considered rude. So here are some general rules to remember when you are communicating on the network. Remember, you're dealing with people. These are not nameless, faceless robots here. There is a real person sitting on the other end of that other computer. Adhere to the same standards of behavior that you would follow in real life. Know where you are in cyberspace. If you're on letsbekids.com, post things appropriate for letsbekids.com. If you're on some adult video game site, well, you might your posting habits might be a little bit different. Respect others' people's time and bandwidth. Don't go and send out huge attachments. There's a mailing list I'm on, and there are these people that'll send 3 megabyte songs. I am on a 512K modem. And I really did not want to spend all that time downloading a 3-meg song that I didn't want anyway. So send a link and be courteous of my time and bandwidth, and don't send me links or don't send me an attachment of 5 megs of music or whatever that I didn't really even ask you for. You just send it out to the list. That wasn't very courteous.
Okay. Actually, has anybody ever been on those voice chat services like Yahoo Chat and somebody insists on playing their CD over Yahoo Chat? I think we've all been there for that one. Netiquette is a very difficult thing, but it basically try and take into consideration what your impact of your message is going to be on other people. So if we're on the Cavi list, I believe we have a message sending limit of 40k. The reason we've put that limit on there is because 40k to 150 subscribers becomes quite large, and that's a lot of bandwidth and stuff that's chewed up by the server to send that out to you all. So yeah, Grace is right, send links, send references, that sort of stuff.
Share expert knowledge. That would be in the category of don't make up answers to look like you know what you're talking about. Really, it does you more harm than good. Do not engage in flame wars online, because that stuff's going to stay around forever. Those students cannot get those messages back. Respect other people's privacy. Don't go hacking into their MSN accounts and pretending you're them, and setting up a dates for you to meet up with their friends and then standing them up and whatever, haha. Not very funny. Be forgiving of other people's mistakes. If you've got a new user on a forum or somebody just learning how to use email and they send a blank message, don't jump on them. It's not nice. We've all made mistakes on email lists before. Try to be a little bit tolerant.
I think the line they usually trot out is, "We're all newbies once," which is a bit like saying you're a kid once, but it's true.
Huge, huge thing, huge rule, number one golden rule of netiquette. Do not say or do something online that you would not do in real life. Sorry about that. Aardvark just messaged me. And I had to...
Anyone got any questions or comments before we continue on?
Just one comment that I will make, and that is courtesy goes a long way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and you'll find that you'll get quite a bit of respect on the internet. Or in any communications.
I've got just a comment.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Just looking through the notes here, I know it relates back to, I think Grace touched on it before, being aware of what your policies are, if you are happening to be working in a company, and also be aware of what they call SLAs, or service level agreements you have with your clients, because sometimes you may be called upon to provide a particular level of care, or you don't want to either go over that or under that, and it's always worth knowing what those are if you happen to be working in a company with a particular client.
Yeah, we haven't gotten quite there yet. I did briefly mention the SLA, but we will be getting there after we talk about our stress levels and stress relieving techniques. So, would anyone disagree that being a technician can be stressful? I don't think I'd have any disagreement if I made that statement. No. So, here are some stress management techniques that you can use to your stress levels down and make sure you don't blow up at that poor customer who really didn't do anything to you, but it's 4:15 in the afternoon and you're just done and tired. Take a moment to compose yourself between customer calls. Every call should be independent of each other and should not carry any frustrations from one call to the next. You may have to do some physical activity to relieve stress. You should stand up, take a short walk if you can, do a few simple stretches and movements, or squeeze a stress ball or another widget that you can keep on your desk. Take a break if you can and try to relax, and you'll then be ready to answer the next customer call effectively. Another thing to reduce stress and back problems and posture problems in the long run is to make sure your workstation has good ergonomics. Have your headset and phone in a position that is both easy to reach and easy to use. Your chair should be adjusted to a height that is comfortable. Adjust your computer screen to a comfortable angle so that you don't have to tilt your head up or down to see it, if that applies to you. Make sure your keyboard and mouse are also in a position that is comfortable for you. You should not have to bend your wrists in order to type. And if possible, make sure or try to minimize external distractions such as noise or fire drills. Another thing that will help with stress is to practice good time management. You'll be under less stress. Use a checklist so that you do not forget a customer when you're doing your callbacks. Try to call a customer back as close to when you said you would as you can. This will make the customer believe that you are a reliable person. And pretty much if you can do that. Otherwise, you may have software that your company provides you that does that for you. Any questions or stress tips or any questions on time management?
Sit with your feet flat on the floor, not kinked back under your chair.
Yeah, I don't know why the manufacturers of office chairs put the swing springs on chairs, but they really shouldn't. Although they actually have put a lever to stop those swing springs from working, but a lot of people swing back on their chair. And unfortunately, sometimes if the center of gravity of the chair is wrong, they can end up in a pile on the floor.
Guilty.
You're doing a great job, Grace. Everything's going great.
Thank you. Okay. We're going to do a little bit of talking about SLAs, and Elise probably knows a little bit about this because she probably does her own. When dealing with customers, it is important to adhere to that customer's service level agreement, SLA. An SLA is a contract that defines the expectations between organization and the service level to provide an agreed upon level of support. So, you guys have seen these extended service agreements. That's pretty much an SLA for your iPod. You may be able to call up, have 6 months of calling a 1-800 number tech support, and they'll get back to you if they're busy within 24 hours. And if your iPod is broken, they will send you a little envelope, and you can stick it in there, send it back, and they will They will repair it for you. But they won't come pick it up from your house. That's the $500 crazy SLA plan.
There's actually cases where Apple wasn't honoring those agreements because the iPods weren't considered the current model, so they were just treating them as a consumable and just ditching them and sending a letter back to customers. Sorry, iPod unrepairable.
That's nice. So when a customer calls, after you get their, you want to introduce yourself, get their name, and their account number, customer number. If you do that, you want to look up the SLA and see what kind of service they are entitled to and how you can help them. As an employee of a company, your job is to honor the SLA that you have with the customer. It's typically a legal document that contains responsibilities and liabilities of the client and the company. Some of the contents of an SLA usually include response time, which are guarantees, and that's often based on the type of call and level of service agreement, equipment and or software that will be supported, where service will be provided. Some of them will come to your home and repair your computers. Some of them you've got to send back your computers. Some of them you've got to take your computers to a store and they will fix it up for you. Preventative maintenance. Some of them offer once a year a technician to come out or remotely tune up your PC. Diagnostics. Where and how will your computer problems be diagnosed? Part availability. Either equivalent parts, or will they fully replace it, no questions asked. Cost and penalties. How much does the service maintenance agreement cost? Does your service include parts and labor? What if you really break it and spill coffee into it? Is that still covered? Time and service availability. For example, you could have 24/7, or Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Or you could have every day of the week, but close at nights. It all depends on what company and what type of service maintenance agreement you have. If something is outside of the SLA, talk to management about servicing the client. They may have an upgrade option for them, or if it's a very good client that has given them a lot of business, they may allow you to do the service at no extra charge. But always talk to the management before you take any action, because it's not you whose SLA it is, it's the company's, and you've got to answer to them at the end of the day. So it's not on what you think is right, it's up to the company. Any questions on SLAs or anything to add, Elise?
Not particularly, I think that's pretty good. As I said, I make my own these days. I have worked in companies and stuff that have them, but I have to watch what I support. I've tightened it up over the years because being the sort of person I'm almost usually willing to help, and I try and keep the customers happy or the clients happy, and I also know a lot about computers other than web design and web development matters. And so it's very easy to get drawn into conversations you really would rather not, and I've had to be firm with people and say, no, you need to get somebody in to have a look at your computer, you need to have support, because they'll ask you about Windows clagging up and all sorts of things if you give them half the chance, and it's outside the scope of problems with their webmail or their email or their website or associated services.
I find there are two responses from people if you say you know about computers. One of them is they'll sort of laugh and go, ha, does not compute, and they'll hand you another beer. And then the second response is that they'll pen you into a corner and start asking you questions about their computer. So you do have to be careful about that.
It's like doctors and lawyers, you know. It's something that people don't know very much about.
Especially people want to get something for nothing. And if you work for an organisation or whatever that usually charges for the services, I'd be very surprised if there weren't people who tried to get those services off you at other times cheaper because you do work for the organisation. And that's, you've got to be very careful about that. I remember we had a friend of mine who used to run the ISP in Lismore, used to have people approaching him in the supermarket going, my internet doesn't work. Can you tell me what the problem is? And I turned to one of these women who did this to him one day and said, we need food, then maybe we'll fix your internet. She's like, ah, fair enough.
Absolutely. And you also want to make sure you know your company's policies on outside work and taking work as a contract work on the side or whatever. You really want to be very clear on if you can do that or if you can't. And a lot of companies these days, you cannot. You've got to work for them. That's it. So be careful, guys. We are going to talk about examples of business policies. Yeah, I agree.
I just yawned just so that anybody who isn't here knows. It's 10:48, just in case anybody wanted to know.
Yep. We're just going to quickly do this, quickly go a little bit over, brush over the legal stuff, and then we're going to take our quiz. Every business has different policies. They'll probably give you a big old handbook that will include things like your dress code and computer use and how often you can go to the bathroom if it's an especially tight organization. You want to know these because you do not want to make promises to a customer that you cannot keep. It's bad form. So here are some examples that you might have to follow at your business when taking calls. Your maximum time on a call, example, 15 minutes before you have to escalate it. Maximum call time in queue, example, 3 minutes. You don't want to keep anyone waiting for longer than 3 minutes. Number of calls per day, for example, you should be taking a minimum of 30 calls per day. Rules on passing a call on to other technicians, only when absolutely necessary or not without the technician's permission. Rules on what you can and cannot promise to the customer. See that the customer's SLA for details. When to follow an SLA and when to escalate to management. So if a customer bought this and this and this product, then maybe they're not that great a customer. You can just say, no, we can't help you beyond your SLA. And if a customer has bought, say, 5 or 10 products, then it's time to possibly move it up to management and see if you can provide service outside of an SLA.
An interesting wrinkle in the IT industry is sometimes companies only provide service and support for the latest version of their product, not their older versions. So that can certainly be quite a nasty gotcha for people who have decided that they do not wish to purchase the new version and they cannot get support for the current version that they are running.
Okay. These are rules that you might follow in a call center environment. You want to arrive at your workstation early enough to become prepared, usually 15 or 20 minutes before your first call. Do not exceed the allowed number and length of breaks, as I said, when you can go to the bathroom. Do not take a break or go to lunch if there is a call on the board. Do not take a break or go to lunch at the same time as other technicians. Stagger breaks among technicians. A lot of places do that. Do not leave an ongoing call to take a break or go to lunch. Well, that's probably pretty obvious. Make sure that another technician is available if you have to leave. If no other technicians are available, check with the customer to see if you can call them back later, possibly in the morning. Do not show favoritism to certain customers. Do not take another technician's calls without permission. Do not talk negatively about the capabilities of another technician. And basically, don't take all the easy calls. Mix it up. If you see a bunch of easy calls on the board and you've just been taking easy calls all day and you see a harder one, challenge yourself a little and let another technician have a break. Any questions on those rules? Okay, now comes the Be Ethical lecture. Not only is it just a good thing to be ethical, it's illegal not to be. If you always want to ask the customer's permission when working on their computer, you always want to make sure that you don't go on your customer's computer and send unsolicited email. Don't use your customer's computer as a spam factory. When you are working on a customer's computer, you may come across confidential information, such as their usernames or passwords. Don't share this with anybody, and don't use it later. If you've got to record it, try and destroy the evidence that you are trying to destroy the records, because that's confidential information, and just don't use it against them. It's confidential stuff. Anything confidential, destroy it. Don't install pirated software on a customer's computer. Of course not. That is so illegal. Don't sell a customer pirated software. That's really illegal. And, of course, nobody here downloads pirated software or even knows how, so we don't worry about it. Right? Right. Any questions on ethics or any other comments?
Anyone still awake?
We're still here.
Wide awake, Carrie.
All right.
Excellent.
I'm sorry.
I think it's almost quiz time, isn't it?
It is almost quiz time. And we are loading up the quiz as we speak, everybody.
Did we talk about open-ended questions, closed-ended questions? Is that in this module?
We talked about that in our troubleshooting module. If you need a review, we can do that quickly. Oh, does anyone need a review?
My apologies. It's it was in the other module, wasn't it? It sort of blends in a bit after a while.
It does. So if somebody does need a review, let us know now. Totally willing to go over it again. We've done it twice, though, and I figured that if people needed a review, they'd...
Chapter 4.
Yep. And chapter 6 or 7, we did it. It's chapter 6, we did it in again.
Once the server comes back up.
Yeah.
If the server comes back up.
Oh, it'll come up. Eventually.
Patience now, Carrie. Patience. Remember what we were talking about. Good customer service.
It's not my problem yet. I'm as patient as can be.
And you know what? We're supposed to put things in positive form. I'm sure the server will be up soon.
You're not supposed to laugh at the end of the statement, though.
No, I guess not.
I'm sorry. Right. At the present time, our server is down. Please call back in and out.
Something like that. I said, I'm sorry.
It's not our fault if you can't get your email and your business is going to go under.
No, couldn't be us. Okay, was there any other questions? If you guys do really want to read your notes, we cannot cover everything 100% that's in the notes. This is an overview and a talk about experiences and a talk about our advice that may not be in the notes. So if something is not covered to your satisfaction, please email and we will set up a time to review that with you. Otherwise, ask questions now.
Also, if there is a longer than foreseen server outage, we will bring the old server back up and there will be access to the notes, although we assume a lot of you will have ferreted away the chapters, hopefully. If you haven't, let us know. We can certainly organise to bounce you a couple of the chapters of the notes if you don't have them stashed on your hard drive somewhere.
Or worksheets, if you have a craving to do worksheets over the weekend or whenever you want to do them. If you need worksheets, we'll take care of you. Okay. Here's our quiz. What is a good rule for a call center technician to follow? Is it A, be proactive by avoiding speaking with upset or angry customers? B, consider each new customer call as a fresh start? C, follow that first impression of the customer and use netiquette? D, focus on how to repair the problem while the customer is speaking. And everybody said B, that's right. While netiquette is great, you're probably not going to use it at your call center. Which two actions are examples of good netiquette? Choose two, so this will be a yes or no. Avoid beginning an email with a formal greeting when it is a reply. And everybody who said no, you're right. Always, even if it is a reply, say, dear whoever, or put a greeting out there. All right. Help keep flame words only for humanistic reasons. Any other answers? That would be a no. Flame words are always bad. Check grammar and spelling before sending an email. Seriously, very good idea, everybody. I have automatic spell check on mine. Use mixed case in email instead of always uppercase or all lowercase. Absolutely. Apply to flames, but not via email. That's correct. Okay, what is an SLA? An itemized record detailing all levels of service performed on equipment covered by a manufacturer's warranty. B, a legal agreement between a customer and a service technician confirming specific service performed on equipment not covered by any warranty. C, legal agreement between a customer and the service vendor confirming a specific level of support. Or D, legal record of customer invoices showing all expenses were approved prior to the repair of equipment. No, the answer is C. It's a legal agreement confirming what level of support the service provider is going to provide to the customer. Service level agreement. The keywords in there are it confirms the level of service or level of support that will be provided.
Didn't we argue in previous years, though, that the warranty would probably supersede the service level agreement?
Absolutely.
Well, we probably did. But I think this is probably more generic as far as, you know, you ring up and because there's so many help desk positions and help desk situations that service levels can apply to, not just your vendor stuff.
Yeah. Just a quick one, I'll catch you all later.
Cheerio,
bye.
Leon.
See you, Leon.
It must be lunchtime in the Sunshine State.
Yeah. What is the primary responsibility of a Level 1 technician? Determining the cause and complexity of problems? Gathering information from the customer? Using remote diagnostic software to connect to the customer's computer? Resolving computer problems that require opening up the computer center? Answer no. A, B, C, or D? And the answer is B, gathering information from the customer. Which tasks would be the responsibility of a Level 2 technician? A, resolving computer problems that are limited to software errors. B, gathering information from the customer. C, directing the customer to the appropriate computer vendor for help. Or D, resolving computer problems that require opening up the computer. And D is right. Good job, everybody. Which two skills are most important for a successful computer technician to possess? Choose two, so we'll go yes or no. Is it A, communication? B, task maintenance? C, work escalation? Computer repair? That's absolutely right. And that is our two. So on to the next question. What is the proper way to conduct a telephone call to troubleshoot a computer problem? Is it A, always gather information from the customer and escalate the problem? B, maintain professional behavior at all times? C, ask personal questions to get better acquainted with the customer? Or D, explain each step to help the customer understand the troubleshooting process? And that would be B. That's right. Because although we care about the customer service, troubleshooting process, they don't. So there you go. A user calls to report that a new computer is broken. The technician determines that the user is inexperienced and possesses limited understanding of the computer technology. How should the technician handle this call? A, write up a brief trouble ticket and send a technician to the customers to resolve the computer problem. B, attempt to gather information using simple step-by-step processes to determine the problem. See? Explain technical terms to the customer to educate them so that they can describe the problem. Or D, direct the user to several websites to help them identify the problem. Absolutely. A customer calls asking help with an error code displayed on a computer running Linux. The technician has limited experience with Linux. What should the technician do? A.
Take ITU2. Just kidding.
Oh, they can't. The class, it's the last run for ITU2.
Just kidding.
We can always listen to last year's lectures.
That's true. A. Attempt the repair anyway. B. Apologize and advise the customer that the technician hopes to receive training for Linux in the future. C. Gather information about the problem and escalate the call to a level 2 technician. Or D. Direct the customer to the website of the manufacturer. C is right. And that's the end of our quiz. Everybody did a really good job, and I hope you guys enjoyed the lecture.
How'd you keep a straight face during that quiz?
What do you mean?
Well, some of the question answers are pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Well, great job, Grace.
Upgrading. Yeah, good job, Grace. Next week we're going to upgrading and having to do all that interesting stuff.
I think we're going to chapter 12 next week.
Yeah, we go to chapter 12, do we?
We do. It looks. We were looking at the server, and it looks like we skipped chapter 11.
All right.
But next week we're going to do possibly a review session for chapter 1 through 10, because you all have a final. Or 6 through 10. We've done 1 through 5.
So we can go on to chapter 12, Grace?
Yes, you can go on to chapter 12. But
Roger that. If
I might honestly take this week to study the chapter 1 through 10 material and look at taking your final whenever you are ready to do that.
Are we forcing them to take the 1 through 10 final now?
No.
I tend to give them more time. Yeah.
It depends who you are.
Well, yeah. I think the way we've normally done it in the past, we've actually activated them both at the end and allowed people to review it as they go through the course if they wish to review stuff.
Okay. Because I remember that I wanted to take my Chapter 10 final after Chapter 10 and did that, and I found that it helped me to, because then I could go on and deal with the other chapters.
I think we can suggest it as a possible course of action, but we would certainly not force any user to do
no,
that.
No.
But if, say, for example, Joe is bored of patting his guide dog one Tuesday evening and decides he wants to do the Module 10 final, he's certainly free to do that. We can certainly activate the 1 to 10 final, for example.
Yeah.
We're just picking on you, Joe, because you tend to be quite a quiet achiever there.
I was only talking to you, Joe, because you have finished your 1 to 10 worksheets, and that was the course of action that I might take if I were you, but that's up to you completely.
I think I am going to do that, so just give you guys a heads-up warning about like what day I want to take it, and you'll activate it for that 8-hour window.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's a big 10-4.
Okay, and for everybody else, you're doing really well. If you guys are welcome to take the final or any tests whenever you like, you just let us know. Keep the worksheets coming. Everybody's doing a really fantastic job. And does anyone have any questions?
Yes, I do.
Go for it.
I know... We all can't maintain our computers, but I've run into an issue. I've seen the answer for this, but I can't remember how complicated it is. I Googled it. In any case, we're putting in new Optiplex computers at work. And when I set mine up, I put Office Professional Plus 2007 on, and suddenly the spell checker in my Outlook Express has a French dictionary. Can you
I know this one.
Oh, yes, I do too. I have the same problem.
Is it a long, complicated process to change that, or is it something simple?
In fact, what actually happens is that the spell checker that comes with Office 2007 actually overwrites the shared files in Outlook Express, and I believe the suggested Microsoft solutions are to either upgrade to an alternate spell checker, or how did you get around it, Grace? Because I think...
I haven't done it yet, but what you can do apparently is you can, if you have an Office 2003 CD, there's something you can install to re-over... Okay, awesome. See you soon.
Yeah, I've actually got an article in my inbox about this exact topic, Bob. I'll forward it to you because somebody emailed me about this last year, and maybe that will be somewhat instructive, and there might be other solutions as well.
Okie doke. Yeah, I have the Office 2003 CD that I bought for my personal use, so if there's a file, I can get it, but... I turn the spell checker on, and it's telling me every word in my email is misspelled,
yeah.
And that about drove me crazy. And then when I Googled it, I got 215,000 replies, and none of them gave instructions. They all gave the first four or five were all windbag dissertations, and I just want the cookbook instructions.
Yeah, we've got them. We can send them through. Somebody was coming across that recently. It is a problem because Outlook Express is outdated. And what can I say? Windows Live Mail is unpleasant.
You know, and if you really get stuck, just email me and I'll try and help you out.
Okay, that's another thing. The license for Office Professional that we purchased is one where we went online and downloaded it, and I had to set up a Windows Live account, and it's taken over my computer. Can I get in there and remove those
Yep.
There are four Windows Lives. I can just take them out, Grace?
It's
gone. They'll never bother you again.
Praise the Lord. That was a nightmare. I was getting Windows Bing everywhere I went.
Somehow I got that on my Triple E. I've got no idea how Windows Live got on it. It doesn't seem to... it's even there.
Comes by default.
Even on XP.
Bog install. Windows Live, it's bog installed.
Boo hiss. Okay. Thanks for your time. I'm sorry to tie it
no
up,
problem.
But I knew you guys had
no
saved
problem.
Me a lot of time.
Just a point, Bob. If you do have questions like this, you can post to the Cavi-Discuss mailing list, and there's 150 subscribers on there, and one or two or five or ten of them will be more than happy to help you with these problems. And in fact, that is our support. That's our sort of freebie support offering to you. One of us will get back on that list and give you the answers to your questions on that mailing list if you have the subscription details for that. If you don't, I will email you and send them through. But we'd be more than happy to answer those questions, and you usually get a very quick response. Sometimes within 10-20 minutes of posting a message, you'll have a reply.
And you can post about absolutely any computer problem on there.
Okay, very fine. I'm not in the office tomorrow or Friday. I got to go to a seminar, and Friday I got to deliver a speech at the seminar, so... I probably won't be on the work computer till next Monday. And it's one of these things, you know, you go to bed and you just lay there and think, surely I should know how to fix this.
No, it's a Microsoft wibble, that one. And it really does make a mess of it. And they obviously figure that you don't use... one of the other ways of getting around it, and this will be really unpleasant, is that you can run Outlook instead of Outlook Express. But I really don't think you'd enjoy that one too much.
I was trying to avoid that, Kerry. Thanks.
Yeah, just what I suggested. That's just a Microsoft answer. There you go.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to get out of here and get ready for my boss to pick me up in the morning earlier than I usually leave, and so on and so forth. So, 7-3 to all. Good night, and God bless you.
Good night. You
good
too.
Night, Bob.
Thank you.
Thanks for
feel better.
Up.